This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. The recently published Malaysian Human Development Report, which was sponsored by both the UNDP and the Economic Planning Unit, found that income inequality in Malaysia is among the worst in the region. Malaysians don't save enough and that the middle class is shrinking. In the studio with me to discuss this report further, but you know, with a focus on the informal sector, because among the 13 background papers written, 5 were undertaken by a few people. And in the studio with me, of course, Dr. Dennis Njaya-Suria. He's a principal research fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan Malaysia. And we're going to be discussing the informal sector as far as the Malaysian Human Development report is concerned for 2014. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dennison. How are you today?
I'm fine.
You know, would you like to just give us a quick overview on what the Malaysian Human Development Report 2014 is? And I understand it's been a report that's been in existence for, it comes out every year. Over how many years so far?
Now, the Malaysian Human Development Report, this is the first time such a report has been done at the global level. The UNDP brings out inter-country comparisons, but this is the first time such a report has been launched in the Malaysian context, largely undertaken with local consultants. Tan Sri Dato Dr. Kamal Salid was the lead consultant, with national consultants Dr. Lee Hock An and Dr. Muhammad were, and a number of other background paper writers. I was commissioned to write on the informal sector. Mm-hmm. Now, the uniqueness of this report is it has brought together both economists and social scientists together, and they have added in that dimension a more human touch to economic development. So you have themes like social mobility that emerges as a key theme to study income inequality, poverty, and also looking at other aspects of human development, not just in terms of economic and national growth, but how it's impacting on people. And that's possibly one of the reasons that they took the informal sector as one key sector that needs to be addressed. Because very often in economic reports, the focus is on multinational companies, public listed companies, GLCs, big plantation operators, or manufacturing and service sector. SMEs are a key component, and SMIs are. But often the informal sector is often neglected, you know, as a sort of small operators and insignificant, and they're not going to make a big impact.
We'll come back to the informal sector in just a short while, but how does this report differ from the National Human Development Report? Because we have one like that.
No, as far as I know, there's no national
human development.
No,
okay.
Not.
All right. But this is the UN working with EPU?
Yes, and other researchers. It was a commissioned work, and then eventually published in that context. At the global level, the UN produces comparative reports and things. Malaysia often has brought out the 5-year development plans and other plans that are linked to budgetary, inclusive development focus, poverty addressal, and themes of that sort in a 5-year. And so this looked more narrowed down to a particular period to then look at both economic, social, and other aspects.
And this will influence perhaps the 11th Malaysia Plan?
I think the input and analysis, because not just of this work, but I think Dr. Muhammad Abdul Khalid's work, The Color of Inequality, also sets and raises new questions to the dimensions of how people are, because Malaysia is largely focused on poverty eradication, and it has done well. We have tended to have neglected or not given sufficient focus to urban poverty and rising inequalities. And also what is said, the sandwich class between the top rich section and the bottom section, the middle class, and more focus needs to also be given to middle class development. because much of development policies tended to focus to hardcore poor, the bottom 40%, not so much on the urban areas, and also addressing and recognizing inequalities.
So are we seeing a wider scope in the concept of poverty then?
Yes, I think in this report and the recent works emerging, there is a significant recognition of rural-urban migration, the impact of poverty, impact on whether these families have the capacity and capability to rise in income levels. Because income can only rise if in the private sector through competencies and how you deliver productivity. So if productivity is not going to be increased, then the worker skills have to increase. Much of our training programs for worker skill development has been on young people entering the job market or into manufacturing, into services, or at tertiary level education. But retraining people at the low end has been quite weak, although we have set up community colleges. But if you are a housewife, if you are an ordinary worker in a supermarket, how then do you build your capacity and your capabilities to a higher level, either language, computer literacy, and how then can the industry then pay you more? If not, those that are wage earners are stuck. So then their options are business or investment into property or stocks to raise their income levels. So the bottom sections that are not in poverty, they are higher than, you know, because they are not in starvation, they might have a small flat, but their income levels are fixed and standard, no? And with rising prices, inflation, and their own children's education, and other costs, then they are actually regressing rather than moving forward.
I know, Dr. Dennison, you contributed in terms of the informal sector, but in your opinion, what stood out in this Human Development Report 2014?
I think the highlight on the section of rising inequalities and the government's focus on wanting to build a much stronger inclusive development model. And so we are constantly struggling with empowering the rich and the powerful to sort of create greater wealth that will then trickle down. So you got the top-down approach. The other that the document and others are showing that there needs to be other forms that enable wealth to be better distributed through taxation system, through delivery of services, through access to credit, better training opportunities to push people up, and recognizing inequalities as a major issue rather than just saying poverty is now less than 2% or 3% of the household. But if we are seeing the number of people wanting to receive BRIM at 500 ringgit or 600 ringgit or more annually, then you are seeing sizable number of people who are still in need. They are not really in starvation or poverty in that sense, but their capacity to move up the levels are a problem. And so I think this multidimensional approach to understanding poverty and inequality is something that is being emphasized in this research work, and some focus towards decentralization and fairer distribution policies might be necessary. I think there is even quite a radical emphasis, even reference to article like Article 153 of the Federal Constitution in recognizing both the special position as well as the legitimate interests of other communities so that inclusion can become social inclusion, economic inclusion, can become a greater reality for a lot of people at the bottom of the pile.
What are the implications of these findings for policy advocacy?
I think part of it would in my opinion, be with regards to decentralized approaches, greater accountability, greater democratic process of sharing of information and access to information, and greater inclusion for sectors that might feel neglected, including women, including indigenous people, sections in Sabah, Sarawak, that are still experiencing isolation from mainstream in a more targeted and concerted way.
How much weight does a report like this carry?
I think
we have reports coming out from all over.
Now, I think literally this report is heavy because it used quality paper. But having said that, I think it has an impact on academicians, public policy advocates, and others who are using it. But the document itself has not gone on a popular appeal or, you know, popularization to the masses. And we are not having, you know, all kinds of excitement that this report would further add to the discussion.
But why should we be excited about a report like this, Professor, when we've got so many, you know, as I said, reports coming out all the time? You always find reports like these, you know, a lot of figures do not tally with, you know, official government figures. That leaves the people very confused. Why should I even pick up a report like this and read through it, you know?
I think there is a fatigue on reports, I would confess, because I have been involved in many, many commission reports and other things. I think having said that, it's still necessary because it's prepared by an independent team. I think it's more for people in government, politicians, members of parliament to actually study it and then draw out the relevance of it, especially in the context of formulating the 11th Malaysia Plan. I think what is happening in Malaysian society is popular discourse tends to dominate, and sometimes social media is partly to be blamed, and all media as a whole, because more popularist kind, a phrase, somebody said this, said that, and everybody gets worked up or upset over it. But they're not looking at substantive conclusions because it's not put in, you know, a contestation form. Or things of that sort. And I think this is where the space for more public articulation and discussion is necessary. The work has been done. I think all the consultants in this case are Malaysians who participated from academic and activist background. And their contributions are valuable to the nation at this point.
You had an engagement on the 12th of January, I think, in relation to this report. Yeah. How did that go?
I think at UKM, we looked at, one, the methodology, because in terms of the methodology itself, we recognized that for the first time, they were getting the lead people like Tan Sri Kamal, who is an economist. At the same time, you had Professor Samsul Amri from UKM Kita, also involved in the process. And so you get the dynamics of social mobility, you get a few other aspects coming in to give life to the struggle and issues. And in that discussion, the report was welcomed. It saw its implications of its finding. And then it is to be seen how best this could be utilized by the drafters of the 11th Malaysia Plan. And likewise, members of parliament should read this because they are formulating the 11th plan, although EPU and others would. And I think many of the key conclusions from this would be incorporated into the other plan as it comes out.
Okay. So the 11th Malaysia plan is due out 2016 to 2020. So yes. We will look forward to that. We'll up next, we'll discuss the informal sector and Dr. Dennison's contribution to the Human Development Malaysia Human Development Report 2014. And what do you mean by the informal sector, Dr. Dennison?
Well, the informal sector in this case, it can be understood twofold. One is the illegal aspect, the underground economy, and there are anthropologists or sociologists who have defined the underground economy, which can be quite large, which deals with gangs, it deals with prostitution, it could deal with drugs, it could deal with other forms. Loan sharking and things of that sort. But the informal sector here is more referring to the small operators. Small operators, formal and informal, but they have legal registration either in a sole proprietorship or they have legal registration as having a license or a permit to sell in Pasar Malam. So They might not be registered business, but they have the license to sell in the market, or they are a farmer out in the rural area and then doing sales by the side of the road. So they're all in a cottage industry. Somebody with less than 5 workers with them would be regarded as small and micro, in that sense, part of the informal economy.
And, you know, we often ignore the informal economy. And how is that going to propel Malaysia towards the year 2020 and a high-income nation, whether or not they have a role to play? We'll find out up next. If you have a question for Dr. Dennison, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sevasodhi. Dato Dr. Dennison Jayasuriya, Principal Research Fellow at the Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan Malaysia, in the studio. We're discussing the Malaysia Human Development Report 2014. Dr. Dennison contributed towards a paper or a section of that report on the informal sector, and we're going to find out more. Doctor, the SME Master Plan goal is to reduce the informal sector from 32% to 15% by the year 2020. Now, you, on the other hand, are championing the informal sector, and you say that the informal sector plays a big role as far as the economy is concerned. What were your findings? What was this report about?
Okay. I think in the case of the SME Master Plan, I think they are rightfully doing that. We want to shift people who are in, let's say, the informal sector up the ladder of business. So if you're a sole proprietorship, we want to move you up to Sindrian Berhad, or if you're just small with one worker or two, you want to consolidate and build it up. So the attempt of the master plan would be to move micro into small and small into bigger,
right.
And the bigger operators into public listed, and those that are public listed into international, multinational, or into ASEAN level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that the approach in the master plan with what I'm suggesting are in conflict, but it is a progression to move them. So because every year more people are getting into the informal sector as people are graduating out of it to the higher levels. I think what we are saying is that the informal sector is not just addressing poverty groups or low income groups. The informal sector is contributing towards the gross national income and the product of the nation. It is providing employment. It is making sure that people are not begging, but they are selling a product, they are cooking and sale, or they are doing some cottage industry, or they are doing something that is more more dignified, more empowering, that creates wealth in a micro small level.
How do we engage this sector even more to move them all up to the next level?
Now, the difficulty now is many within the sector have difficulties vis-a-vis premises to operate from. Because if you're a hawker, you might be on a bicycle, or you're in a push cart, or you're in a corner of the town, and they might get harassed by local authority very often. Mm-hmm. They might have problems to access to credit, although there are various avenues through Amana Iktia, Yayasan Tekun, and other measures now. But they need to be a little formalized with bank account, with small accounting, with writing. So many of them, if you're just selling nasi lemak by the side of the road or goreng pisang, you might not have, you are not banking it, you are not doing simple accounts to show you are credit or bankable. So they face that kind of challenges. Like this afternoon, I had a chendol at SS15 near the bank, and this chap selling the chendol told me, look, I can't. He didn't know I was coming for a talk, but this is what he told me when I was drinking this nice chendol at SS15. And he said, look, I can't stand anywhere in SS15 and sell chendol, because every time I go to one corner, local authority is chasing me here and there. Mm-hmm. Then when I chatted with someone else, they said, look, local authority is interested in cleanliness. It's looking at traffic control. So how then do we give the space for people? This was fairly elderly man, and this is his only source of income. And there were others like that in the area, market area and elsewhere. So how then do we create the space, we recognize them and enable? If not, it's the bigger shop owners, it's the supermarkets, it's the bigger players that will want to take over, you know. So people also need to survive. So if you see an ocean of little fishers, the little fishers also need to survive. And the informal sector is something that we need to give the space for them to grow.
So have we taken this informal sector for granted? Have we ignored them? What is going on?
I think when I looked at...
They have value. They are contributing towards gross national income, as you said. But how do we get them all organized? Or is it us who are not engaging enough and not getting them, you know, organized?
I think in terms of provisions for credit, if one looked at Amana Iktia, Yayasan Tekun, One Azam, the Tukar project, these are definitely in line. But from what we are seeing in the operation of the informal money lenders and loan shark, access is still a problem to credit at that level. Yeah. Now, local authority is largely looking at enforcement. They are doing licensing, they are doing enforcement. They are more regulatory rather than promotional of business, you know. So I think this is where local authority likewise would need to look at options. They might say you can sell from this corner, but the person selling might feel no customer will stop at that corner. So it's how do we create the space? And I would think fairly one could conclude from what I have studied and written that there is no national body or even regional state level that is seriously looking at the informal sector and how they are contributing. They are an asset to the nation in wealth creation. They are addressing poverty issues, but they're also contributing because the figures are saying that they contribute almost 31% of the gross national income. There are more than 1.5 million hawkers and small businesses. The 2012 budget noted that. The DOS report in 2010 indicated that there are 708,000 people involved in the sector at the informal level. So it is a sizable section that's not being given the kind of priority as SME and SMI. I think these are bigger players. I think we need to take the informal sector, while they're at the bottom end of SMI and SME, we need to take them aside to then see how then do we facilitate them and push them up and not let them remain at the informal and very micro level. So how do you help a lady selling goreng pisang or wadah improve her business? How do we improve her capability to do banking, marketing? How then do we help somebody in a burger stall? What I found out in SS14 area, where there are burger stalls, many of these burger stalls are run by some guy who has a chain of burger stalls. And the guy there is just a worker. The whole intention of these kind of very small businesses was that that individual would get the skill of cooking and preparing. He would own the stall, and that his labor will then bear fruit, rather than he's just a daily wage. You know? And these are all Malaysians who are running burger stalls around and small businesses. So it could be eating outlets, it could be a cottage industry, it could be growing something in the rural area, because the Amana Ikhtiar figures begin to show from a study that they gave me, out of 18,000 people who were involved in small businesses, that a sizable section of that group, I think 51%, were involved in some form of business and sale. Others were like in fishery, cottage industry, agriculture, animal husbandry, and they were small operators, you know.
And I think the other issue we should really seriously look at, one is also the middle person. How do we,
the
middle person between the person who does all the hard work and the consumer, the customer at the end of the day? I think the informal sector also has that challenge in that they lose out very much. And indirectly, as you said, it addresses the issues of the bottom 40% of the population, isn't it? Which is, you know, the genesis of what you've written.
You know, one of the most lucrative micro businesses that is carried out is the Ramadan Bazaar. And I have been told that sales in that 1 month could be enough to cover a small operator for a whole year, you know? Because the sale is not just by the Malay Muslim community. Ramadan Bazaar is popularly visited by all ethnic communities who are buying foodstuff and things. So for the Ramadan Bazaar, space is created. Society accommodates these small operators. These small operators work very hard, and that enhances their income level. So we need to see. I know this might be a competition for bigger supermarkets, hypermarkets, and things like that. But we then need to balance between the small operators who need to survive, who need to grow. But then we can regulate them by hygiene and cleanliness and safety, as well as avoiding traffic congestion. And cities could plan this, you know. They can create hubs for artists, can create hubs. Like I know in PJ, like the Umpqua Mall provides, I think, very nominal space on certain Sundays for secondhand dealers, you know. And the whole place is packed, you know. So this is developing a culture that then recognizes small operators need to survive. They can generate wealth. This is wealth. And there is then public policy or support and regulatory framework to assist them, not to curtail and discourage them, like my Chendol man in SS15 today, who said he might have to leave SS15 and find somewhere else where he's not being harassed.
Well, I understand, because I live there and I used to see the, you know, Chendol or the Roja man moving from one place to another. I mean, you go there tomorrow, he's not there.
Yeah.
You need to drive around looking for him.
Yeah.
So it's about getting organized
yes.
and help them as well to earn a living, as you said. Anything else you want to point out as far as the informal sector is concerned
The development plans and budget plans, like I think in one or two of the budgets, the Prime Minister and the Finance Minister has highlighted things like insurance scheme, medical kind of scheme, schemes for contribution towards EPF long term, because these are the risks for the self-employed, because old age, illness, accident, and their social security coverage is weak, and they might be the only person working, or it's a family, husband, wife, one is cooking, one is selling, one might be transporting. That is something that needs to be built in, and my hope is that the 11th plan will give some specific reference to the informal sector, not just as a poverty eradication program, but recognize them as wealth creators in a small way. But if there are a million people in a small way creating wealth, it's going to make a big impact to the economy, and they are a sustainable source of employment and job, and have some form of counsel or support to the informal sector to develop this further. And that then will see their human development potential. So over the next 5 or 10 years, they move up the ladder through hard work, through creation of this wealth, through their self-effort and better marketing skills. So whether they get access to how to do marketing, better product knowledge, better nutrition, or better hygiene, traffic. And those are supplementary and complementary things that a federal agency or a state agency or even the local authority can provide. So let's say if there is a hub within local authority areas for this kind of thing, which we tolerate and actually enjoy from, which is the Ramadan Bazaar, yeah. We could create similar things like that to enable the informal sector to progress within the progressing Malaysian society.
Peter's also saying, Dr. Dennison, and I'm just going to summarise what he's saying. I mean, they are a very vulnerable group of people. They are exposed to a whole lot of manipulation and bullying to a very large extent. And regulatory enforcers, enforcement, people who enforce the law, they are vulnerable to that as well. So that also needs to be looked at, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we get organized, then that might reduce the vulnerability.
Yes, and also problems of corruption, abuse of power, all these are related to any issue where licensing, space, and other things are involved. And that is something that we would need to look at and see it as a potential. And I think this is a great role for local government to enlarge its scope more than just providing license or chasing the guys away, is really have a policy to promote the informal sector, especially in urban areas and even in local authority in rural areas, in that way, in a significant way.
Thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Dennison Jayasuriya, Principal Research Fellow, Institute of Ethnic Studies, University Kebangsaan Malaysia, speaking to us about the informal sector as far as the Human Development Report 2014 is concerned on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.